I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. The golden rule of medicine is, first, do no harm. Many doctors, though, raise the bar on that rule. Some even try to help way outside their own comfort zone. So we were compelled to speak with a doctor in Atlanta, a successful heart surgeon, who decided to go volunteer in a Syrian refugee camp. Omar Latouf is a cardiac surgeon at Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta. Until recently, Dr. Latouf says he knew very little about the Syrian crisis and the massive refugee problem. Thanks very much for joining us, Dr. Latouf.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Werman.
So you're a cardiac surgeon in Atlanta. I'm going to guess that comes with a fair amount of affluence. You play golf, or maybe you do, you know, those kinds of things that cardiac surgeons do. Your life is comfortable. That must have been a big change when you got to the refugee camp.
Oh, it was a tremendous change. I went there, we all went there with a great deal of apprehension, not knowing what to expect, feeling that we're going to go into a place that's going to be deprived and depressing. We arrived there. We had to stop at the gate, checked by the police who guards El Zaatari, and then we went in. There are 86,000 people currently in El Zaatari, down from 200,000 a couple of years ago. It's like a little city made of trailer homes, no air conditioning, no heating, dirt streets. It was pretty rainy that week that we were there. The clinics themselves were sparsely supplied. There's stretchers, beds. The X-ray machine was not working. The electricity would come and go. There was an electric generator operating the clinic.
So it
came in handy.
Did all this make it difficult for you to kind of find a way to help out, or you just kind of jumped in with, necessity is the mother of invention, and you're going to do what you can do with what you got?
Right. Well, as a cardiac surgeon, there was no cardiac operating rooms, no equipment there. So I really was operating as a general physician there. First couple of days, I worked in the emergency room, and I saw six or seven kids with second-degree burns, mostly 2 years, 3 years, 5 years old kids, and almost all of them were burns from scalding water accidentally dumped on their chest and arms, and we treated those little kids. So several cases of severe tonsillitis. Kids could barely breathe.
You said there were other volunteers with you. How did they make a difference? How did they help out?
Oh, the energy level was amazing. People just jumped in. Nurses, cardiologists, eye doctors, everybody basically took a room and converted that into her or his clinic, and we're seeing patients. We would see, in a span of 6 days, we calculated that we saw 5,000 patients.
So 5,000? Wow.
5,000 between all of the 70-member team. 800 to 900 patients every day.
And I suppose they were all very much in need. It wasn't just like, I need to get this checked out.
Oh, the emergency room was busy with patients who have tonsillitis, who had burn wounds, who had abdominal pain, who had kidney infections. One case we saw was a lung infection, was suggestive of maybe tuberculosis. And we immediately isolated that patient and notified camp managers, and they arranged for him to be seen at the Noor Sanitarium in North Jordan.
Dr. Latouf, are you Jordanian originally?
Yes, I am. I was born in Jordan and lived there until I was 17 years old, and then came to the United States and pursued medical school, and I became a cardiac surgeon.
What was it like for you going back to Jordan and seeing your country in this particular light of this refugee camp, Zaatari?
I went there thinking that I was going to treat patients, heal patients. It was exceptionally emotional experience going there, seeing children whom we examined. We did eye screening examinations. We screened about 400 children, ages from 2 years old to about 15, 16 years old, and some adults. We connected with those children. Mm-hmm. They were beautiful children. They were all smiles. They were happy. They were jovial. They loved the candy that we would give to them at the end of each exam.
Yeah, I know you had some remarkable encounters with your patients, especially the young ones. But I'd like you to tell me about a young boy you met named Samir and that final moment where your youngest daughter, Zina, who was with you, gave him some candy.
Yes, Samir was surprising. He and two other kids came on the first day. We examined them, each got a candy, went away. Then they came back and they brought some more kids, and they would go and come back and bring more kids. Before we know it, they became our top recruiters, bringing in children. And the amazing thing is that Samir would come in and he would help very politely, would never get in the way, always quiet, never ask for another piece of candy. And the second day he came, he said, "Where is Miss Zina?" So he connected with Zina. The third day he came, he said, "Where is Aunt Zina?" And he would always hang around and ask questions. So what is it like to be a doctor? How can I become a doctor? And on the last day, as we assembled on the bus, sitting there, and I looked through the door, which was open, and I see a young child sitting in the corner. That looks like Samir. He was sitting there, his head was pointing down, and I figured it was in his own way. He was saying goodbye, but he didn't want to impose himself on us. So I looked at my friend Bill Burke. I said, "Bill, give me some candy. I want to go and give him to Samir." So Bill gives me the candy. I head to the door, and Zina holds me by the arm, and she says, "Dad, can I give Samir the candy?" I said, "Sure." So I gave Zina the candy. She went out, and she knelt on the floor in the street next to him, and he was still looking down. I could see his hand stretching. She gave him the candy. I'm listening to the driver, and he says, "It's time for us to move." So I called for Zina. I said, "Zina, the bus is moving." And Zina waves me down. A few minutes later, she comes back, and she's very quiet. And as the bus moves, I see teardrops coming down her cheeks. And as I'm looking through windows of the bus, and the image of Samir is fading away, teardrops turn into sobbing with Zina crying, and we moved on. And I look at Bill Burke the next day. I said, "Bill, this was emotional." And Bill says, "Omar, I cannot get Samir out of my head."
What was it about that kid that just was so unforgettable?
You know, his piercing eyes, very determined, very gentle, coming in the morning and then disappearing and coming back in the afternoon. And we find out that at 11:30, his classes start and at 2 o'clock they end. So he would come to see us in the morning and come back in the afternoon after attending to his classes. And what was really impressive about so many of those children, they were beautiful children. They could have been just as much my children when they were younger. It's families, middle-class Syrian families, whose luck had turned on them, and some of them had lost everything that they had. And it looked like at one time they had resources, they were self-sufficient, and they had a lot of pride and self-respect.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. They just ran out of luck, just like any of us could at any point in our lives.
Yes.
Dr. Omar Latouf is a cardiac surgeon at Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, sir. My pleasure.